pleasure. You will come and reply to the liaison officer in Kamishan. I would also like to welcome our support staff and all other guests. The apologies that we have today, once more we have the sending apology from Ms. Honorable Yvette Nyalungu. We have received an apology from Honorable Mashopa, she is unwell. Honorable Sinokwanyana, she is in the health EPC and debating there. She will join us later today. Honorable Sheikh Imam is in the Sadek. Yes. And Honorable No is also not available because of the events that took place last week. Honorable Matlow?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to say that Dr. Fee is on his way. His flight was cancelled this morning, so he had to take a later flight. He has landed and he's on his way here, so he asked me to apologize, but he will be and he'll be late. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, we are meeting today this morning to receive comments and briefing from presentation from the FSC on the 2016 appropriations year. Without any waste of time, let me then hand over. I also do welcome the representatives from the Parliamentary Budget Office. Let me hand over to the FSC to give us views on the 2015 appropriations.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Bongani Kumalo. I chair the Financial and Fiscal Commission. I have just make an apology. One of my colleagues in the commission, Professor Daniel Blackis, will be joining us. He's running a bit late. I think he got lost in terms of the venue. But he will be joining us shortly. I have on my right here Miss Poppy Ntaka. She is our latest acquisition in our Cape Town Parliamentary Office. She used to be an intern. We decided to keep her with that. And then on my left, I've got Dr. Hamid Amusa and Mr. Ali Dawood. These are program managers in our research team in the FSC Secretariat. Now, Chairperson, the first slide that I have on the board is a slide that just describes the role and the function of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. I think we are all aware what the role and function of the Financial and Fiscal Commission is. So I will skip that slide. Now, the next slide basically gives a background to this briefing that we're making today. It's made in terms of the money bills Act of 2009. That section 4C of that act requires parliamentary committees to consider any recommendations of the Financial and Fiscal Commission during their deliberations on money bills. And we also make this in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act of 1997 as amended in 2015, which requires that the Commission responds to any requests for recommendations or briefings by any organ or state on any financial and fiscal matter relevant to the Commission's mandate. Now, in terms of the request that we received from this committee, we were requested to look at four specific areas. The first one was the allocating efficiency and baseline changes to the main box. Second one was the affecting government's priority areas in the medium-term strategic framework. And the third was around infrastructure investment in national government. And the fourth was mechanisms that can stimulate cost efficiencies. Now, in terms of the general story, which is something that we've been talking about since February when the budget was tabled, what we know is that this bill is actually tabled at a time of escalating both exogenous and endogenous challenges for the South African economy. This is the third straight year of downward revision on growth forecast for the country. Cumulatively, you've got 2.5% downward revision between 2014 and looking forward to 2017. That does not mean that government spending has been declining. What it means is that in terms of what our expectations would have been around the resources that have to be shared, we have come short of what we would have been expecting. And obviously, put that against the demands on government spending, one would definitely be feeling we have come short of what the expectations are that have been created over a long period of time around the growth of the economy and therefore the expansion and extension of public services. Now, the low and regional growth, which is way below the NDP target, substantially constrains government's ability to address the triple challenges that the National Development Plan identified, and that's around the social ills and also the fiscal and external balances that we are dealing with are also deteriorating. Now, this low growth will see South Africa's external competitiveness lagging behind those of its peers in the BRICS and across the world. Now, I think, Jefferson, what we want to do is to talk about the specific issues that you requested. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to request Mr. Khalid Dawood and Dr. Hamed Amusa to give you the details in terms of the numbers that I've spoken to and how those numbers, what the implications of those numbers are on those four questions that you asked us to respond to. Dr. Amusa.
Thank you, William. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the next slide that you have, as the Chairperson has pointed out, the first thing we're beginning to see is government trying to do a balancing act in an environment of constrained economic growth and a slowdown in the economy. The resources are not as available as they were prior to the slowdown, global slowdown of the commodity boom. And therefore, government has to prioritize its expenditure programs to make sure that it does not cut back on essential services to citizens while trying hard to make sure that it's able to fulfill certain obligations in terms of its macroeconomic fundamentals that it aims to keep. So what you see there is, overall, the national sphere has had a decline of about 4%, approximately 4%, signaling a departure from what is held over the past 3 years. And what you see is that this decline is necessitated by targeted reductions in non-essential goods and services, mainly the compensation budgets, procurement, and cost containment measures. The same, a freezing of posts within a range of departments and reorganizing the employment fields across the spheres of government to streamline operations. In terms of the numbers that you have there, one of the things we would like the Appropriation Committee to note is number 15, the Higher Education and Training Budget. What we'll see is that across all the major departments, the Higher Education and Training Budget for the current, in the next appropriation period, has increased substantially compared to the average that it had over 2013 to 2015. So you have a 10.7% increase compared to the average growth rate of 2.2%, essentially a difference of about 8.5%, showing that government is responding to certain key demands emanating from higher education and training sector. And what you see also, another point to highlight, is that government has tended to keep essential services spending at an even keel. So your basic education, your higher education, your health, and part of economic development have seen their appropriation baseline change higher than what obtained in terms of their average real growth rate over the previous period. And this is a welcome development. The same thing has occurred in terms of human development, where you look at their baseline change compared to the average real growth rate. You need to speak to a number of issues that that particular department is tackling in terms of provision of houses. When we look at the assessment of spending outcomes in terms of 2015-2016, what we have noticed is that we have seen an improvement in terms of how government departments are allocating their budgets, implementing their budgets. We have talked about the concept of allocative efficiency, where government departments have been encouraged to ensure that the optimal allocation of resources are directed towards where the areas of their need, and to enhance their budget spending in a manner that ensures that they do not underspend or overspend, and are able to fulfill their obligations in terms of spending priorities. What we notice is that on average, with the exception of basic education, most national departments have tended to spend most of their budgets within the financial period that they have been allocating their resources. Basic education is still a big concern for the Commission, especially in terms of the fact that they have to deliver quite an essential service within the education of primary school children. And we're concerned about the range of underperforming conditional grants within the basic education sector. It's a key point that we would like to highlight for the Appropriations Committee. In terms of the national average spending, comparing what you have for the 2015-16 period and spending average for 2012 to 2014, we have seen an improved resource allocation as government has embarked on a process of fiscal consolidation necessitating national departments to align their budgets much more with their spending priorities. We are seeing an increase in alignment between the allocation and the spending, which is a welcome development in that respect. Next slide, please. When we look at the 2016 appropriation bill in terms of government's five key priority areas, the slowdown in the economy and the need to transform the structural dynamics that underpin the change that South Africa needs to undergo in terms of the National Development Plan are highlighted within these overarching priorities that inform the assessment. So we have the issue of promoting economic growth, job creation and economic transformation, and the essential services in education, health, and improved public service. Next slide, please. In terms of promoting economic growth, as Commissioner Kumalo had mentioned earlier, we have had successive periods since 2013 of downward revisions in South Africa's economic growth rate. In fact, last week, the International Monetary Fund cut South Africa's expected growth rate down to 0.6%, which begins to further constrain whatever plans that government has in terms of what policies that are set in place to build the economy. The reasons are around the issue of the export. So South Africa's export competitiveness and the constrained global economic environment, the weakening of the Chinese economy, the continued slowdown in our European trading partners market, and despite the growth in the U.S. economy, it has not translated into a boom or a recovery, substantial recovery for the world economy. And this is quite important for South Africa, that when we have our growth rate cut down to 0.6%, when you look at comparatively to other emerging economies on the continent, Nigeria, for instance, despite the slump in the commodity price, oil is the main commodity, is expected to grow at 2.3%, and Kenya is expected to grow at about 5.6 to 6%. A 0.6% growth rate for Africa's most industrialized economy, way down from what was anticipated in January, which was actually 0.7%, begins to speak to how government needs to play a much bigger role in enhancing or implementing plans or fast-tracking plans that it aims to bring about addressing the slowdown in the economy. And these are structural impediments that the government has talked about, the greater synergy between government and businesses and rebalancing the economy are seen as quite critical. And the welcome development of the recent investor rating agencies decided to keep South Africa, Moody last week kept South Africa at investment grade status, and hopefully Standard & Poor's and Fitch will also follow suit, will at least stave off some of the potential declines that South Africa's economy can face if we were to be downgraded down to junk status. Next slide, please. In terms of job creation and economic transformation, we have this week seen Statistics South Africa release figures which have shown that despite concerted efforts by government, there's still the rate of unemployment still remains of critical bearing on how government policies can impact in the long run. Already we're seeing an unemployment rate of about 26.7%, the highest since 2010, and the highest in the first quarter over the past 8 years. 5.7 million odd people out of jobs, about 400,000 people lost their jobs in the first quarter alone of this year. And they lost their jobs in key sectors, manufacturing and construction. We were able to absorb a lot of the low and middle-skilled people in South Africa, and it begins to speak to concerns about whether government's ongoing policies are actually addressing the employment burden that South Africa faces, especially among the working population, the youth working population aged between 16 and 34. The figures from Statistics South Africa actually indicated that the rise in employment for public services, community and public services, which is the government sector, especially within the local governments and provinces, through the expanded public works program. But the dent it's making on unemployment is still relatively insignificant. And we need to shape more about how, longer term, this substantial increase in the unemployment rates will have to be addressed, especially within sectors that are able to absorb most of the low-skilled personnel or people entering into employment for the first time in their lives, and how long-term that can impact on the welfare and well-being of people. We know that in the medium term, investment in public employment programs by government, especially in terms of the jobs funds and the public works, has increased substantially by 5.8%, which is a welcome development. But it remains to be seen to what extent that increase in the allocation to such programs are able to make it based on the employment figures that we're beginning to see, which is of a big concern at this present point in time. Next slide. With that in mind, I'll hand over to my colleague, Mr. Ali Dawood, to take us through the rest of the presentation.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members. The third priority that we'll be speaking to relates to education. Now, we know that education is one of the main government priorities in the medium-term strategic framework. and it's also one of the main sectors that consume a large chunk of the government's allocation. Now, when we look at the percentage spent on education compared to total government expenditure, education consumes 17.6% of all of the resources. So with that amount of money, despite all of those resources going into education, the Commission is concerned that educational outcomes is still not where it's supposed to be. If the Year Commission has made submission on education, highlighting certain areas within the educational system that needs improvement. And it's welcome that the Commission welcomes certain key developments in the sector that has been flagged in the 2016 Appropriation Bill. The one important provision that the Commission welcomes is the emphasis on learning materials for teachers as well as for students. Now, the Commission has done previous research in this area in 2004-2005. It basically highlighted the importance that this play in terms of improving quality of teaching as well as learning. We all, of course, know the challenges that a lack of school materials have had on education systems in certain provinces. And this is a welcome development in terms of improving the outcomes in the sector. The Commission also notes the merging of the indirect component of the school infrastructure backlog grants for the Education Infrastructure Grant in 2017-2018. The Commission has always been of the view that grants that have the same objective should actually be merged in order to streamline processes and also to improve efficiencies. However, in this case, the Commission would like to emphasize that the merging of the grant should not be because of poor performance, but rather because of efficiency gains. Now, the other welcome development is the introduction of an ECT grant for ECT infrastructure. And the Commission welcomes this because of the recommendation that emanated out of its recommendations which the Commission tabled for the 2016-2017 Division of Revenue. We all know that ECT forms the foundation for the learning of the labour market. And it's very critical that at that stage we invest significant resources in order for us to be able to achieve the human capital growth and skills that the economy requires. Moving on to the next slide, looking at the health. Now, health remains a priority in the 2016 Appropriation Bill. We would have noticed early on that health increases by one of the largest shares across the roads in the national sphere. So this is a welcome development. There have been important priorities that have been implemented in the 2016-17 Appropriation Bill. One of those priorities is the emphasis on expanding HIV/AIDS as well as TB. Expansion of these two areas is most likely going to lead to a reduction in mortality rates as well as increasing of life expectancy, which are important MDG goals that government set itself to achieve by 2014, I think. So these the expansion of these programs are quite important. However, the Commission would just like to emphasize that in terms of the allocations to this particular grant, it's important to emphasize that one should also look at the way that the grant is being implemented. Are we achieving efficiency gains in terms of the way that the resources are being allocated? Also, what we find in the 2016 Appropriation Bill is that the NHI grant is being phased out over the MTF period. Now, we know that the NHI grant has had significant implementation challenges in previous years, and the Commission has always raised concern about this particular grant. Over the MTF period, what has been decided is to phase out the grant, but for its objectives to be absorbed in the National Health Insurance Grant. Now, while the Commission welcomes the report that will be focusing on some of the key challenges and also to identify some of the solutions that can be taken forward from the closure of the grant, the Commission is concerned about the haphazard initiation and closures of grants, because there's an impact in terms of the way NHI is being rolled out. Moving on to the final priority, which is improving public service. The National Development Plan is quite clear that in order for us to achieve our developmental objectives, what is required is that there should be a capable state that has a skills and capacity to implement the government's program of action. Now, in the 2016-17 appropriation bill, there are a number of interventions that are aimed at boosting the capacity of the state. Among these measures are reforms to stabilize public entities. Now, we know that public entities play a significant role in terms of our infrastructure-led growth strategy. And therefore, it's very important that for these entities to play a positive role in terms of infrastructure development, the finances needs to be in good shape. And if entities are going to be spending in a way that is not consistent with the principles of the MTSF, then it could put the fiscus under significant strain. We also note that there's now compulsory impact assessments of policy as well as regulatory change. And the idea is that this compulsory impact assessment is really to assess the impact of policy, new policy that's going to be implemented by the government. And the idea is that these new policies should be aligned with the budget process. Previously, the Commission has raised the issue that quite often when policies are developed, it's done in the absence of any costing, leading to unaffordable programs which cannot be implemented appropriately. Also, another major reform that is underway are reforms to the procurement system. We know that a significant amount of goods and services are procured throughout the system, and this is one area where government can actually achieve significant efficiencies. So through the reforms led by the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, there are a number of reforms that have been implemented, and in the pipeline is a public procurement bill which will replace all other legal instruments that will be governing public procurements going forward. Now, what is required in terms of all of these measures to improve the capacity of the state is actually clear indicators that can track the impact of these reforms in terms of achieving value for money as well as reducing corrupt in government operations. So yes, these new initiatives should be welcomed, but to what extent is actually leading to efficiency gains, and it's quite important we know what that is. With infrastructure being a key priority over the MTF period, there are also measures to improve the efficiency with which we spend the infrastructure budget. Among these measures are new procurement standards, which were issued last year in November, to allow officials great flexibility to negotiate lower prices. Now, we know that there's been a constant problem in the government where one province will, for example, procure maybe building up a school, for example, at 50% more than another province. Now, given that there are provincial differences, that quite a significant difference if we want to look at increasing that over infrastructure budgets. So our idea is to really try and identify where we can actually save costs. And 3 to 5% saving in the budget of 280 billion rand plus comes to a significant amount of savings for the economy. Also, there's completely introduction of management contracts. One contract ahead will oversee all aspects of the project, thus reducing government exposure to the risk of overruns and delays. Now, we know just by the example of Kusile and Mudupi, the costs to the state of the overruns of those projects, as well as in terms of delays in finalizing those capital projects. So that development is welcome. Now, moving on to the section of infrastructure, the Commission asked us to look at infrastructure investment at the national level. Now, over the 2016 MTA period, 275 billion is going to be allocated in with respect to economic infrastructure and network installation. The bulk of that investment, in fact 94% of that investment, will be implemented through your public entities, hence the emphasis on trying to reform public entities and making them more sustainable. Now, a large chunk of that investment is being directed towards the electricity and transport sectors. in order to unblock or to remove bottlenecks so that the investment in these sectors can actually enhance economic growth. We all know the constraints that are in the electricity sector as well as the transport sector. These are key sectors that derive investment, that derive job creation, and it's important for government to get these sectors right so that there could be spin-offs from these sectors. In terms of the public transport, 34 billion is being allocated in the 2016-17 financial year. This includes commuter rail. And then with respect to the electrification program, there's going to be a decline from 5.8 in 15-16 to 5.7 billion in 16-17. So there is a marginal decline, but the emphasis is trying to make up that decline through efficiency gains by negotiating lower costs from suppliers. Also, it's quite important that infrastructure investment plans are well coordinated so that it actually fosters economic growth. Quite often, different sectors implement the investment plans or infrastructure plans in isolation of other sectors. And it's quite important in order to achieve synergies and to get economies of scale, these sector plans need to be merged and streamlined so that they're able to feed off each other. Now, one important thing that the Commission would like to emphasize that up until now, there's been heavy emphasis on building new infrastructure. The bulk of infrastructure investment has been allocated towards new infrastructure, which has led to the maintenance and the refurbishment of infrastructure being left behind. And here, the Commission would like to emphasize that while it's important to focus on new infrastructure, equally important is also to focus on the maintenance of that infrastructure and the refurbishment of that infrastructure, which will lead to longer lifespan, asset lifespan for those assets. Now, moving on to cost efficiencies, some of these areas we have dealt with already, but we will mention some issues within these sections that we have not covered. The third area that we would like to identify is procurement. You know that procurement, there's been a lot of waste, poor quality carbon surplus, as well as inflated prices. And frequent flouting of supply chain management processes in all spheres of government. So the Commission welcomes the reforms that have been taking place by the Office of the Chief Procurement Office. However, these reforms should not just be focused at national and provincial level, but should also cascade down to local government level, where a lot of challenges relating to procurement still exist. Now, National Treasury has estimated that 10 billion is spent annually on travel and accommodation by all states of government. And the Commission believes that efforts to contain such expenditures need to be followed through. And here we suggest that there should be a simply managed system where travel and accommodation rates can be negotiated for all spheres of government so that we are able to receive or achieve cost efficiencies that are currently not being achieved by government. We also would like to draw the attention of this committee to the public sector wage bill, which I'm sure all of you are aware of, and also the fact that quite often the wage bill crowds out other government priority expenditures and forces sector departments to reallocate funding from priority areas to fund the wage bill. The Commission is of the view that the strict regimen in managing a bloated public sector workforce should be applied to local government as well, and public sector wage should be linked to public sector productivity. Now, we know that the public sector wage bill has been escalating, and that there have been certain measures that have been taken to try to rein in the public sector wage bill. And for us to be able to achieve that, it's quite critical that there should be stability in the labour market as well through a three-year wage bargaining agreement between the public sector, labour unions as well as government. And we, of course, the work in terms of how to address some of the efficiency gains or how to achieve that is being carried out by the Judicial Commission looking at the public sector wage bill more broadly. And the Commission supports the work of this commission, of this Presidential Commission. Also, the Commission continues to be concerned with the deep-rooted problems of underspending on appropriated funds. and high incidence of irregular and wasteful spending. It was a building capacity of oversight monitoring bodies, and such officers should be doubled as they are key to improving spending efficiencies. So we know that every year the AG would assess the finances of departments, and quite often there are significant overruns or irregular and wasteful spending which the AG has reported on every year. And it's quite important that all of us who address this issue, the key thing that you should be focused on are your oversight bodies, and also to provide capacity to budget officers in order to interrogate and play a much more stronger role in terms of assessing the budgets of these departments. There are also other areas in which one can achieve improved efficiency, especially in the municipal space, and this relates largely to reducing water and electricity losses, improving billing systems, and ensuring regular repairs and maintenance of infrastructure. That's something which we have emphasized previously in our previous submissions. Chair, on that note, I'd like to hand over to our chairperson, who will take us through the final slide.
Thank you, Khalid and Ahmed. Now, Chair, just as a matter of conclusion, I think from the budget that was tabled in February, we as a commission are convinced that government is still continuing with the commitment to manage public expenditure in line with the economic trend that it is operating, and the commitment to the expenditure ceiling as set in the 2016 budget review is evident in assessing both the allocations and the spending outcomes from the last financial year. We are convinced that the credibility of the MTEF is intact. We also need to, as a commission, to support increased efforts at improving efficiencies, and we would like to emphasize that there is a need to measure the impact of the steps that government is taking in order that we are able to track what the implications on the value for money arising from all of these initiatives are. We also want to welcome the measures that are being taken to rein in the wage bill, and want to emphasize that it is better to agree on a multi-year agreement rather than on an annual agreement where every year we have to be dealing with strikes and then we end up with an agreement that is now trying to balance the reality of service delivery against the strikes. Now, Chair, I think at this point, what I would like to say also is that I need to express on behalf of the Financial and Fiscal Commission the view that we have come a long way in trying to deal with some of the legacies of the past, including lack of infrastructure in those provinces that inherited the homelands. I would like to say here that at the Commission, it is quite a depressing development that what we have seen in the past week with all the resources that have been put by the state in building a future or laying a foundation for the future of the children of South Africa, we have seen what we have seen in the form of the destruction to school infrastructure, in particular in the Limpopo province. I would like to say that we are at the moment sitting with a very big report as a commission that we received from Eastern Cape around the challenges that the province is facing with respect to inherited and ongoing backlogs in infrastructure that we must be dealing with. And I think at this particular point in time, the last thing that one would expect is a situation that we have seen in the past week, where government's efforts at addressing the needs of the people on the ground is basically being treated the way it has been. And we would like to appeal that as we express our views as the people of South Africa, we need to also take responsibility for the future of the children and the rest of the people around us. We would like to conclude on that note, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for this presentation. Let me allow the members to engage with the presentation. Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Firstly, let me thank Commissioner Kamolo and his team. We are always enlightened by their presentations, and it certainly helps us to get an overview of what's happening. I just wanted to highlight something on slide 3 for the sake of the Appropriations Committee, because I think it's something we might lose sight of, and it would be as well for us to remember it and keep it in our thoughts. The fact that the Familiar Bills Act, Act 9 of 2009, requires us as a committee to consider any recommendations of the FSC, during their deliberations on money bills. That means when this committee applies itself to the Appropriations Bill, we have to consider what the FSC tells us. That almost mandatory. It almost means that if you make a good recommendation, we have to take it on board. And I think very often we just sit and listen and you sort of explain things to us and we say, thanks very much, it's a nice explanation that we don't, but you take it on board. I think we should really consider that part of our mandate is to accept your recommendations and to perhaps even bring about amendments in the Appropriations Bill as a result thereof. I imagine that was the intention of the legislature when they put this together. And I think we should be mindful of that fact. I don't have any comments, as I think your presentation has been comprehensive in and of itself, but I do have a few things that I would like just to inquire about. On slide 7, that's the assessment of baseline changes. I noticed there that for basic education, we go down minus 7.8%, and higher education go up 8.5%. Now we seem to be throwing money at higher education because of recent events and trying to fix a problem that's arisen because of the student action and so on, but we're doing it at the expense of basic education. And I think we're getting into very dangerous territory here, because if we don't keep up with basic education, there'll be nobody around to have any higher education, because we need the one, obviously, before you have the other. It's a cart and horse situation. I think we need to be very careful about that, and I just wondered whether the Commission had any comment on that. I may be wrong, please correct me if I am, but it just seemed to me that we seem to be doing that here. And if you could just please explain to me the bottom line there, that with the total appropriation by vote, you've put the 16-17 appropriation baseline change, minus 3.8%, annual average real growth, 13-14-15-16, 3.5%, and then the difference between A and B is minus 7.3%. I just understand how you put that. My arithmetic and yours don't seem to agree with each other. If there are both minuses, I could understand it. But one's a minus and one's a plus. So it was almost, I would get a result of 0.3. But now, I don't know how you get the 7.5. Perhaps you could just explain, or 7.3, I should say. Perhaps you just explain that to me. Slide number 8. I have the continuing concern that we tend to measure our performance on our budgetary performance, where we as a department have spent anything over 95% of our budget, we regard ourselves as doing pretty well. But we don't seem to be measuring it against the performance. Are we achieving the targets we set for ourselves with that expenditure? Or are we achieving 5% of our targets and spending 100% of our budget? Because if that's the case, we've got a major problem. And if it's the other way around, if we're just achieving 100% of our targets and 100% of our budget, then obviously our target setting and our budget arrangements need looking at, because they're way out of line with each other and we're wasting a lot of money, or we're outperforming ourselves and we're not planning and doing our programming right, because we could be achieving a lot more if that's the situation. Perhaps you could just comment to me on that aspect. And then on the slide, some points I have. Slide 15, infrastructure investment at the national level. Are we talking about this? We're currently putting money into infrastructure. So we're allocating money to public transport. We're allocating money to the electrification program. This, to me, is something that's going to be fairly short-lived, in a sense, because we're going to reach a point at some stage where we've achieved what we want to get. We've now got our infrastructure right. You don't want to keep on and on doing it once you've got the place where you no longer need it. Is there any way we predict going into the future how that's going to affect our performance down the line? Because surely and hopefully we will reach a stage where all this infrastructure spending results in some kind of return on our investment. If we no longer need to build power stations and those power stations can then just produce the power and sell it, we're going to turn around. We won't have to be funding them anymore. We're going to start getting money back in. Is this factored in any way in our long-term vision? Is all I'm thinking about. And then I was very pleased to hear the word maintenance mentioned. I've looked at many budgets over the years, and it's very, very seldom that you see anything referring to maintenance. We like buying new things, but we don't like looking after what we've got already. And it's so much cheaper and so much more efficient to maintain things. I personally think we should start introducing legislation to make it obligatory that you have to maintain what you have. I know they try and say to municipalities you need to spend, I think, 9% of their budgets on maintenance. Most municipalities never get there because their budgets are so tight that they use the money they have on what they need to buy, and therefore maintenance lags behind them. Our municipalities and municipal areas tend up looking the way they do as a result of that. Slide 17, under eliminating spending inefficiencies, limited building capacity of oversight and monitoring bodies. I like the idea, and I think it's very important, because at this point in time, I don't think we're very good at it. I recently wrote a letter to the Minister of Finance asking him to perhaps consider the way we as a committee operate. Instead of us going once a year out on an oversight visit, and there's a lot of fanfare, and by the time we get there, the people are expecting us, and they know us what they want us to see, and we showed all the nice to see things. My suggestion was that we break up into groups and do unannounced visits to various entities and catch them by surprise, because I think that way we'll have far better oversight. We'll be seeing what we want to see rather than what we all wanted to see. And I think it would be a great thing if we could do that on a much broader basis, where we could do spot visits, spot checks and things like that, rather than these planned kind of oversight things. So I think that it's not efficient and it's not effective if you're expected and you're expected to be fated and wined and dined and all the rest. That's not what the purpose is. And I think we miss the boat there very often. But improving efficiency in the municipal spaces, from my own experience, I think one of the most important things there is that municipalities are obliged legally to collect the money that's due to them. They don't do it. It's a place where they fall very short, and often when they report that, so I know we have a 90% collection rate, but the problem is they're only billing 20% of the community, so they've got a 90% collection rate on the 20% billing that they're doing, and it means that they're not really collecting much at all. And it's a major problem, because that amount that they're required to collect is supposed to make up for the fact that the grants are fairly low in the bigger picture. That's why, in my opinion, municipalities struggle so much to make ends meet, because they're not efficient at collecting the money that's due to them. In your conclusion, Commissioner Kumalo, You say that while targeting non-core, non-performing programs as areas where expenditure can be cut, my concern there is, for example, when I see non-performing programs, the worst performing budget or the worst performing department is water and sanitation. And because of their poor performance, their budget gets cut on a fairly regular basis. To me, it shouldn't be happening, because it is the most important thing for a population is to have a water supply. No water, no life. And I think for us to be cutting budgets there in order to fund other things is almost criminal. We should be doing something to address the problem of the non-performance, not taking their money away because they're not performing. I seriously think that needs some careful attention. And then lastly, checking value for money. Again, I think it's very important, but I know the argument is that we're in a developmental state, we're in a situation where we're trying to redress issues of the past. Therefore, we shouldn't be worrying too much about value for money. We should rather be getting money back into the system so that previously disadvantaged people can be empowered and so on. But I think we need to find a balance. We need to find the optimum point here where we're not just being ripped off wholesale because people are trying to sort of on a get-rich-kind scheme. I don't mean it in any derogatory sense, but it tends to be what happens. The view is, well, it doesn't matter that they're charging a bit much. They meet all the other criteria, so let's just appoint them to do the job. And then the job ends up not being done. We recently had a situation where we were told by Water and Sanitation that they'd employed a management company to oversee a project, and that company had been paid many millions of rands, and had produced absolutely nothing. The product hadn't really got off the ground, and yet all the money had been spent already. And I think we just fail to see the wood of the trees sometimes, and I think if you could make some suggestions to us how we can get around that and avoid it to make sure that we do actually get value for money, I'd be very happy to see that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Manana.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from the FSC. It's very informative and very good. On slide 16, you know, measures stimulate cost-efficient business. The reduction of government spending on travel and accommodation. I fully agree with the national treasury. There's a lot of money that we are spending as government with regard to travel and accommodation. And we fully support that if we can have maybe a central managed system that can look at this issue, because most of the travel agents, they are charging government exorbitant lots of money. This issue needs to be addressed once and for all. I see here we are talking about traveling and accommodation, but there is this other issue of incentive to government officials really is crippling government, because people, they are claiming this to make money out of government. On slide 17, measures to stimulate cost efficiencies and improving efficiencies in municipal spaces. I don't know really when are we going to address the issue of improving building systems. Every time we are complaining about the building systems, we believe support the FSC that these issues need to be improved, because people, they are not paying because of the poor billing system. And at the end of the day, we will see service delivery riots precisely because people, they are not happy with it. And the maintenance of the infrastructure at local government is very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Not here for now. Just one or two issues from myself. I think that issue that you are raising, and which Honorable Manana has emphasized on, capital expenditure on property. The one area that seems to be overlooked is the ground transport expenses, which I think also needs to be included in all of this. Car hires and the claims and all that kind of stuff. That's one. But two, I think you have indicated quite correctly that there is need to refocus our attention on the structural reforms in order to regenerate growth in the economy. If you could expand, perhaps some specific areas that we could perhaps use as recommendations, for particularly for this bill. In other words, in processing this bill, what should this committee be saying needs to be done specifically in that area, so that Parliament, through this committee and perhaps the other finance family committees, begins to say, these are the structural reforms that need to be focused on, so that we turn the economy around quite quickly. I say this as well in light of Step SA's latest figures on unemployment, and I suggest that we link that as well to that subject of urgently addressing this issue of the growing unemployment, arrest it and then move forward to what should this bill be saying on the area of the rising unemployment. Is there a recommendation that we could place before Parliament to say XYZ that needs to be in this bill to address this specific area? And I'm linking these two together because necessarily they speak to each other. So those are some of the areas that I thought we should perhaps have a look at whilst we are sitting in this meeting. Let me look around and see whether there's another member who would like to. Honorable Bishop Eston, Honorable Sik.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, FSD, for actually opening our eyes to some of the things. I think we share your grief and disappointment on the one issue. And I think as a committee, we should give ourselves time to actually deliberate on things, because one is not the only instance. These things have been happening, but it is just the climax. And maybe as a committee, it is time we apply our minds and come up with suggestions to do that. Secondly, I just want to say that, you know, I have known Mr. Kumaro from 1998 and I've always taken this commission in very high esteem. And I would like to most humbly suggest or request the commission to look at the thing of, you know, this IMF North Point something downgrading. It's worrying. It's worrying. It's mind-boggling. Is it this downgrading? Is it because we have done something wrong, or is it because we have got the BRICS bank coming, or what is it? We should actually scratch the ground and find out at what things have we committed, or
what is it that we have not done right as a country?
Because, you know, at times I just think alone and say, what's the wise thing to be part of the global village? Shouldn't we have maybe locked ourselves alone and deal with our slow growth alone? Because, you know, the thing, you never know. There will be other agents saying what they want, maybe in a month or so. We don't even know what they're going to say. But, you know, I begin to be very suspicious that maybe they don't like the respect. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Apologies once again for being late, but it wasn't my own doing. It was because of the inefficiencies of SAA. That's why I'm late. So I'm serious, because one of the problems it mentioned is the state-owned entities and public entities. It was just a piece of paper that wasn't signed, so we couldn't take off. Now, surely that is a serious problem. But nevertheless, so it wasn't my fault, but I apologize. Jay, you made a good point, and I want to support you on that one, is the recommendation. Honorable McLaughlin mentioned that we always get good information from FFC, and we do that. But I think we have enough wise men in the FFC to give us recommendations, because it's useless if we get this information year in, year out, and then just tick the box to say that FFC recommended in terms of the money, bills, procedures and related matters, Amendment Act and so forth, if we don't do anything with it. So I think I would like to support what you're saying is, what must we do? What recommendation does the FFC give us? How should we, what should we do to rectify it? I think it's very important. That's the one. So, Chair, and then obviously because I wasn't here, I don't have too much to say, except if we refer just to slide number 6, and that is the, just to highlight. Now, this last bullet point last night talks about slow growth will see some triggers external competitiveness. Now yeah, I get concerned, because when we have some of the ministers explain why we are not doing well, then they say because of the global economy. But yeah, the other statement saying that, but we are doing bad, but our competitors with the people we do business with are doing much better. And the stats show us as well that the countries within BRICS, except for, I think, Brazil and probably, but anyway, they are doing that. So whilst we understand it might be so, Honorable Shopi Sitola also alluded to that maybe we should focus on what we can do best, and instead of blaming other people. So it's an important point that is mentioned here, but we need to understand that in order to compete and in order for the country to grow, our economy to grow, we have the NDP. And it's about time we started looking at what the NDP has stipulated, looking at those targets and trying to meet those targets. It's in my view, it's not negotiable. Those targets are there for a reason, and if we don't use and meet those targets, then we are going to fail. Some people are saying perhaps we should look at revising those targets. I would never support something like that. I'm just mentioning. So I strongly believe that NDP is a good measurement, and we need to try to meet those targets. On slide number 14, again, I'm just raising these points, which this is the one about the first slide number 14. Among measures adopted include reforms to stabilize public entities and compulsory impact assessment. So again, I mean, last year we had ESCOM. You see, NAMI, and sorry to mention this, and I'm not making but the fact is that the capacity of ESCOM, and I don't have the figures with me, I remember was something about 40-something million megawatts. And we had enough, that was the capacity. And the demand was much, about 8 million or megawatts lower than that. So the problem, we mustn't get excited now because there isn't load shedding. We have the capacity. But the reason why we had load shedding was inefficiencies of the entity. And we need to make sure that they work properly. I mean, again, SAA, we had an issue a few weeks ago where the planes were grounded because of safety measures. The planes were not safe. And then all they did, they filled in a piece of paper, and the planes were safe again. Now, surely, can't be that the planes were unsafe. There's a problem with the, again, it's as a result of inefficiencies. The people didn't do their work properly. That is why planes were grounded. And I would like to know what loss of income that resulted in that. So again, it's important, but we've got it here. Some of us know it, but without taking remedial action, you're going to come back next year and you're going to have this similar report. So all we're saying is the recommendation is going to just support you, Chair. And then lastly, Chair, I just want to say that second bullet point, eliminating spending inefficiencies, again, what is the reason for that? You know, underspending, you've got the money, you're not spending it, so again, people are suffering. Now, I'm not saying that the people of the country are happy with what's happening in with the schools being burnt, it should never happen. But again, you know, you're having this because people are looking at solutions, that's the wrong solution, but that's why these things are happening, is that people are not getting what they deserve. The country deserves better. And because, and when they don't get it, then they look at solutions, which obviously in this case is not the solution. So we need to make sure that we give the people what they are entitled to, and the country will be in a better space. Thanks, Chair.
Let's not really restrict you to recommendations with the issues that you raised, but there's various options that you think we might look into and try and make this bill respond to the urgent issues that are arising, as you were saying quite rightly, structural reforms. What are the urgent things? What are the SA figures coming out? What should this bill be saying about that in response to that? And other various options that you might want us to say, look at these things, and therefore when we take this to Parliament, we are able to say there are these various options which needs to be looked into in trying to address some of the urgent issues, make this bill a lot more relevant to the issues in the immediate and best going forward. That I think is what we're trying to say. Yes, Honourable Shaw.
Sorry, Chairperson, just before we come in, I just want to appeal that, you know, as leaders, we should actually stick in with what the FSC has said and condemn destruction of property. Because you see, if we say when people don't get what they want, they can do things, you know, we are leaders. People, some of the people will say, I'm not getting what I want, I can do it. South Africa is a democratic country. People do have the right to demonstrate, but the destruction of property must be condemned unequivocally by all of us. And maybe it's because Honorable Fig was not there when the LSD actually raised it. So I am appealing that we must be unanimous. Destruction of property must be condemned. There is no excuse for that. And we must stand together and hold hands on that one. Thank you.
I did not condone that. All I said is that's probably why it was done. I'm not saying I agree with that. We must strongly condemn destruction of any property. That's not what I support it. I'm just saying. So I'm not saying that it was done or it must be done when people don't get their way. I just want to clarify that.
I do want to say that perhaps members are beginning to think ahead and beginning to say, you know, we have this appropriation fee, and then there's 23 schools destroyed and other infrastructure destroyed. What does it mean now for that area in Kokar in the face of this fee? what does it mean going forward to the medium term, the MTB, what was it called, MTBPS in October? What, when infrastructure is destroyed, out of the frenzy of demand, etc., and so on and so forth, once heads cool off, Parliament and government must go back to say, but there are no schools in that area, and children must go to school. And the police station was destroyed. And the clinic and the road that was cut now needs to be revisited, and so on and so on and so on. In the face of a constrained fiscal environment. And I think that is what is beginning to dawn in minds of members. We're talking about the appropriation, money that's been allocated for various government projects to advance service delivery to the people. Some destruction is going on elsewhere. Of the same infrastructure that has assisted people to get services that they've wanted all these many years before. So I think that that's where our minds are beginning to block in. And that's why you hear this kind of interaction. And I think it's something that, as we talk about appropriation and as we focus our minds forward to October, how we say, not only one, but a lot of depression and friends as well. And this takes the government backward. It takes the people back in terms of provision of services, in terms of money spent and then destroyed, because that's what it would be. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that comment, because that was where I was going to start. The reason why I brought up the issue of Vuani Limpopo against the issue of the Eastern Cape infrastructure challenges is because these are real issues that we are confronted with. In our submission that we tabled last year in May for the 2016 Division of Revenue Bill, and it also tabled in terms of the FFCS, the Constituent IGFR Act, and also the Money Bills Amendment Procedure Related Matters Act. We made a set of recommendations that some of the assumptions that we make as the FFC is that Parliament is a support structure. We have a Parliamentary Budget Office, and we also have the usual committees that one would be expecting that as we come here, there would have been like some sort of a briefing about what the Commission's recommendations were around these issues. Now, I would want to refer you in terms of the set of recommendations around the specific issues that relate to how do we ensure, and I think the set of recommendations is 1.7 in the recommendations of the annual submission for the 2016 Division of Revenue. It's on page 36. It says, with respect to creating conditions for the future prosperity of all South Africans from infrastructure-led growth, the Commission recommends that, and there's a list of recommendations. I think it's about, I'm not going to read these things, it's about five of them. That basically relates to, we all agreed at the onset of the global economic crisis that In order to get out, and the role of government would be to deal with our infrastructure challenges. And that is why, as we speak today, we're saying, 94%, 84%, 94% of the infrastructure spend is happening within the public entities and the municipalities. Now, if things are not happening in those areas, then we have a problem in terms of the overall fiscal policies that government has taken. to address the challenges that it is faced with. Because one does not expect government to start getting into eggs and clothes and all of those types of things. But one expects government to create the environment that enables economic activity to take place. And so, Chairperson, the set of recommendations that we have are on page 36 of our annual submission for the Division of Revenue around these types of issues. Now, the issue of it has to be common cause that as you process this bill, you've got to take into consideration the contingency that has just been realized. The contingency, nobody expected this to happen. When the bill was drafted, nobody expected 24 schools in Limpopo in one area to have been banned. And therefore, going into, and we know that our contingency reserve has also been eaten away by other issues that we've had to deal with in the past 2 years. So if you look at the fiscal framework and you look at what this gives, because what this gives effects to the fiscal framework, and I think it's important that as we deal with this, we get into the same mode to say, what does this mean? By the time we get to the medium-term budget policy statement for 2017, we have to be thinking about these things that have now happened. And I'm saying, Honorable Chair, that in our conversations around the submission that we made, of which I have referred to some of the infrastructure challenges, we had a conversation with the Eastern Cape on the basis of that. And one of the key issues that they raised with us was that they have a problem with infrastructure, and we then said to them that as a commission we can't deal with one province, but if you have a specific issue that you think is very specific to this province, please put together a report. They gave me a report 2 weeks ago, which paints a picture that at face value, we haven't actually evaluated it sufficiently enough, but at face value, it paints a picture around what used to be and what then happened. So we had what we call the backlogs component in the provincial equitable share formula. When things changed and that backlogs component was removed and replaced by the infrastructure, provincial infrastructure grant, I think we called it PIC at that point, a lot of things happened that the Eastern Cape still faces those challenges. So when they list what is there, you then must start asking yourself questions, did we get it right when we transitioned from the original formula specification to the new in code. So there are these issues that are there. And those issues, Honorable McLaughlin, now I'm going to move to this basic education versus higher education and training. In 2012, the Commission submitted a report which indicated that higher education and training, in terms of government's contribution, was going down. But the responsibility was being expanded. So you're taking over FET colleges, nursing colleges that have been like, so you have all of these things that will happen. But if you trace the trajectory of the government's grant, and then you put that together with the number of poor, because the model is based on students paying something, government paying something in the form of a subsidy or a bursary, and the private sector contributing something. That's funding of universities. But if you take the story from 1994 of expanding access to education, including the schools that have been banned, I would suppose, there's a lot of poor people that have come through the system
poor children that have actually gotten into higher education, who are not always there. Now, if the grant is going down in relative terms, and you're getting more and more poor kids into the university system, the university cannot be raising sufficient amount of money. Let's say most of them, some can, but not as much as they would have liked. To take into account the expanded number of the demographic profile of students in terms of affordability, then you have a problem. So you have a backlog in higher education and training in terms of the funding for those institutions. So we might see numbers telling us, and that links to your issue around, if you spend this much, does it mean that you are doing well? No, it might not mean that. It might just mean that you are trying to correct something in the past quantitatively. Qualitatively, you still have a long way to go. Now, there's no trade-off from where we see it between higher education and training and basic education. There's no trade-off. The point is that higher education and training has a backlog in funding. And the response to what happened last year with the fees postponed and all of those free education demand is just something that tells us that at some point, when you shift things around, it is always important to look at what the financial and fiscal implications of those decisions are going to be. And unfortunately, I can tell you now, this is actually very true. We only dealt with the issues of higher education and training and FET shifting in particular from provinces to national government in 2013. Now, this happened already in 2010. And when we raised it at that particular point in time, we were still dealing with only higher education as in universities. That's what we were dealing with. And we raised the issue that FET would actually mean you need even more money to deal with that, because those were all underfunded, extremely, by provinces. You know, so there's a challenge here in looking at the numbers. There's a challenge that universities and higher education and training face, which is not necessarily a trade-off with basic education. Basic education, the cuts were mainly on programs that are not performing. Otherwise, in terms of the priorities that have been identified, everything is one of the beneficiaries anyway. Yeah. Now, so the second question that you asked, Honorable McLaughlin, which relates to, do we measure good performance on the numbers? I think at face value, when you're sitting here, you say, we allocated you this much, how much did you spend? So if I'm a treasury official, I allocated you this much, how much did you spend? If you didn't, you know, he's nodding. You say, no, you don't need this money. So that's it. Then you can explain why. That's the second level, and I think for us, that second level is very important because it deals with the Commission's core mandate is to ensure that we have an equitable system. So whether it's at a person-to-person level, at an organization or institution-to-institution level, we have to look at those types of things. So I think I agree with you fully that once we have looked at those numbers, 99%, 85%, we must check what is right. And it will come back to this value for money issue. Because sometimes value for money relate, and I think in our context, and I'll be very selfish here because I'm an economist, value for money is buying something at the price that is worth what you benefit. If you buy bread at 20 rand and somebody else buys it at 50, but what I gain from bread is the same. There must be a problem with the one that buys it at 50. And that then gets linked to the accountability framework. The people that make the decisions on how to spend taxpayers' money have a legislated
manner in which they should operate. So we need to link those decisions where they involve the use of money, we need to link them to that accountability framework, whether it's the Public Finance Management Act or it's the Municipal Finance Management Act. We need to link it. Yeah, oftentimes, I also serve in the commission that the Presidential Remuneration Review Commission. And one of the areas that we have been having a conversation around is that the work that we have excludes in terms of the, it excludes local government. But when you should deal with issues of service delivery, you've got to look at it from the top. Somebody makes policy, somebody implements, and somebody delivers. Most of the public services that we get, we feel them at the local government level. That's where service delivery protests start, because I can't feel what government is providing for me. So there's a link between service delivery and decisions that are taken up there. So that accountability framework for each work, we need to be looking at it like in those edges. So I think, Kwani Koman, I do understand your comment, but I also think that it is still an important issue if you link it to the accountability framework. But somebody has to account for it. The issue of water and sanitation is, I think here we were talking about non-performing programs. And yes, I do understand that it's a very painful exercise, because if you also think about it, water and sanitation as a department, it's a new department. So obviously, they will have growing pains that they must go through. And sometimes you don't want to choke them. If you have a tight environment, the budget constraints is very tight, is hard, then sometimes you might take those hard decisions, and if you then realize that no, this was not a very good idea, the reason why some of these things always from the Commission's perspective, that if a program is not performing, you must not make an assumption that this program is useless. We must evaluate and assess what are the causes for this program not performing, and whose responsibility is it? And it links back to feedback to that accountability framework. Whose responsibility is it to make sure that this actually is actually happening? Because I think in terms of the law and the constitution, there are very clear responsibilities that are drawn in dealing with these issues. And there's a lot of legislation that also reinforces those constitutional principles. And now let me move on to this issue of the travel and accommodation. The difficulty with being obsessed, let me use that word cautionary, being obsessed with travel and accommodation is that invariably we have a system of government that requires people to travel. It is a very big country. There are a lot of people that are in the most far-flung of areas. Institutional arrangements probably do require that at a certain point somebody must go to, I live in Midrand, but at a certain point I must go to Springbok. I can only fly to Kimberley, and then I must drive to Springbok. So if you have these things that are, now, how do you balance that need? For the Financial and Fiscal Commission cannot be sitting in Pretoria and came to be saving the people of this country when they don't know the Financial and Fiscal Commission. So you've got to be thinking about these things, and how do we then balance that? So again, the questions around the value for money become important. I have Professor Blackie there. He lives in Cape Town. But sometimes I have to come here, because when he's in Cape Town, he also has to be somewhere else. I can't say to him, go to Parliament, because we must save money. If he's somewhere else, he's somewhere else. So the point that I'm trying to make is that whilst we need to think about this, we must evaluate the value that travel accommodation is generating. And the issue of cans, again, I think, Honorable Chair, you would agree with me that some of these are a result of greed. Simple. Greed, people lie. And they steal. And I think if we have a strong accountability framework and we enforce it, then we change the incentives. Because you can only do certain things because there are incentives for you to do that. If you put in a system where the incentives are negative for doing that, then people will stop that. The issue of municipal spaces and their billing systems, let me not preempt. On the 26th of May, we will be tabling our annual submission for the Division of Revenue 2017. We explored, and let me just say that the theme that we are running with is trying to introduce into the current narrative that is about the urban economy and dealing with the challenges that our big cities are faced with, including migration and demand in public services. We've decided that we need to also think about the rural economy. And specifically, there's a couple of chapters that are dedicated to municipalities in general and rural municipalities in particular. And that is where a lot of the gains on this infrastructure spending one would expect. And I must say that when I spoke about the Vuane issue and the infrastructure, part of the story that we have is that in some of these areas, people don't look at schools and clinics as infrastructure targeted at developing the rural areas. Because when you educate people and you've got the rest of the supporting infrastructure, and they can actually get a job, it's a safe environment, there's good water, there's good electricity, there are good hospitals, there are good schools. There are a lot of people that can actually decide, I don't need to go to Johannesburg. So you can actually move a lot of the challenges that our cities are faced with. You can actually mitigate them by actually developing these rural areas into something. I mean, China has done it. They've built cities out of nowhere. And so when we destroy that type of property, then what we are trying to deal with might be an effort in vain. The value for money might be challenged. Why are you doing this when people are training the schools and hospitals that you say we must build? So it's those types of things. Now, coming to you, Chairperson, you spoke about the recommendations on the structural reforms. I've made reference to that. I am sure my colleagues sitting next to you there will basically summarize those things. If they have a challenge, they must give me a call. Then I will assist them in packaging them in the manner that you would want to see them. Honorable Shokes Tole, the issue of globalization and the credit rating agencies. There is in our the word version of this presentation that we made here.
has got a story about South Africa's credit rating history. Most amazing thing that we have is that today we have a narrative that suggests that it's the first time that we have reached those low ebbs in our credit rating history. It's not the first time. So you deal with these issues as they come. They do matter. We must deal with it. And I think that part of what government needs to do is to ensure that it has credible policies. It must ensure that there is certainty in terms of the policy direction that the government is going. And more importantly, we must ensure that we exercise fiscal prudence. That those things basically matter. Now, there are other things that somebody else who is not government must also do. A good citizen of their country tries to do good for their country. You can't downplay it because you don't know who you are talking to when you downplay. So there are those things that need to be done. The other thing I'm sure that a politician isn't, as you are, Honorable Show President, you would know that there are other things as an economist I would call noise. They are noise. So when you try to make sense of a social problem, you model it somehow. So there's something called noise. And that noise, I can't deal with. But what I can say is that for globalization, I mean, it would not help. I don't think that it would help to say we are on our own. There's a number of countries that have tried to be on their own and avoid. It's not sustainable. So the global economy is the reality. It, how we deal with it is what is important. Honorable Fit, again, there's an issue about recommendations that you raised, and I think I've responded to that one. But then there are other issues that you raised around the along the same lines that Honorable Sharp has told. It's around what is it that we can do. And I think even our, maybe the first or second slide, I can't remember, that where we talk about the internal or endogenous, this is sometimes people use very complicated words, but it's just the internal and external factors that we're faced with. So the internal factors that we are faced with, definitely we have to deal with them. And I think we know, because sometimes I listen to the conversations that you have in Parliament. Sometimes I sit with my colleagues from the different departments, including from the Treasury, just discussing what are the issues that are facing us that we need to deal with. There are issues that we must deal with internally as a country. There are also those issues that we must adjust to globally. Now, if I were to say something that maybe, let me say one issue internally that I actually from where I sit and operate, I think it's an exercise in futility. It's called the collective bargaining system in the public sector. There are no issues that you can bargain with if the only thing that you are talking about is how much money you must get paid. The Public Service Commission has got numerous reports that indicate how many accounting officers have signed performance contracts by such and such date that the law requires, or that government policy requires. Now, if you don't have that,
then it expects that you're going to go and have a negotiation with somebody on how much what they must deliver must cost you. Then there's a problem. So it's a very simple thing. It's internal, because every year you lose so much time because people want salary increases. So you have this collective bargaining and people on strike. But you ask yourself a question, but what are we bargaining about? We are talking about how much the increase must be. But we're not talking about for what. So it's just some of us, these are internal to us. We have control. So when somebody comes and assesses you on those types of issues, that they are going to come and write a story about how South Africa manages its public service, and then they publish it somewhere. We all know here it gets published by the IMF, and that's what Honorable Shaw personally was saying. It gets published by the IMF. We all say the IMF says this, as if we didn't know. So we need validation for things that we know we must do. So that's a simple story. Just to wrap this up, I'm going to ask Honorable McLaughlin, you asked something about the numbers. The good doctor here will talk to you about those numbers. I think, let me ask these two gentlemen to respond to those numbers issues. I think I've tried my best to answer all the questions.
Just to respond to the final question, well, if you look at the table on slide 7, I think it's slide 7, for 2016-2017, there's been a baseline change of minus 3.8%. Okay, so that is in real terms. In other words, taking inflation into account, the actual value has declined by 3.8%. And what we did was we compared that figure with the average annual average real growth in the previous 3 years. And what we found was that the average growth was 3.5%. Now, when you look, if you take the average growth in the previous 3 years, which was 3.5%, the question we asked, how much did the growth decline from that level of 3.5% to reach minus 3.8%? And that's where we got the figure of minus 3.8%.
Any follow-up questions? No? All right. Now, yes, thank you very much, Chairperson of the FSC and your team. Does someone want to, National Treasury, have any comments? No. No, thank you very much. We will be meeting at 2 o'clock again in M46. Yeah. I wish to thank you very much, the team from the FSC, our members, thank you our support staff, CPO. Thank you very much for your attendance, the National Treasury, and all our guests. The meeting ends at 10. Thank you very much.
I don't know if there's somebody else there.
I'm told lunch was going to be ready at 12:30. So, if you could stick around, otherwise, Parliament will lynch us all.